It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. I'm Dave Richmond. Our Pirates playback. Pirates, unfortunately, losing 49-24 yesterday as we're recording this on Sunday afternoon. We got a crowd with us here. I love it. Kyle from Grange Barber, what's up, man?
What's going on, dude?
Well, sad, but anyway, it is what it is. Bubba Rosenbaum, how are you?
I'm doing well. Hope you guys are.
Absolutely. And, of course, always on our playback, and that is Terry Gallagher. How are you, man?
Oh, it's a beautiful day here in Central Georgia. It's 72 degrees, sun shining, and I'm on my way to the grocery store for my wife. She's still having to do supper by a straw. And turkey's not too good when you puree it.
I'm gonna talk to the doctors. They wired the wrong person's mouth up. That's to fix the wrong person. It was supposed to be Terry, and they did your wife Gail. She took one for the team, I guess.
Well, she's a trooper. She's a pirate. Look here, she's a pirate. So I wouldn't have had anything. Can't be any different.
And Bubba, we've got another great pirate with us, don't we?
Yeah, we do. Another Pirate letter winner, Jay Sunhalter, who played for Coach Holtz and then also has done a heck of a job broadcasting games with ESPN. Jay, welcome into the show.
My guys, what's going on? Thanks for having me on.
We're very happy to have you back. I'll tell you what, I hope that you're getting ready to like really break it out here on ESPN. I hope you won't forget your guys, your boys, when you make it big time on us.
Y'all are my squad.
Jay, let me ask you a question. I'm not going to say the guy's name because I have a lot of respect for him and I think he does a good job. But there's what happened in the announce booth where sometimes seemingly people that have perfect sense and know a lot about football, do you just get confused talking a lot during the game where at some point you absolutely lose your mind?
Well, sometimes. Yeah, I mean, sometimes when it's live, you know, and stuff happens, I mean, you know, it's everybody makes mistakes or, you know, there's things that happen at live time where you don't pick up on it. So stuff has happened to me before, too. But, yeah, that's the thrill of it. That it's,
it's just being live and talking so long, I guess.
Yeah, but I love it. But, yeah, it's exciting. So.
Okay. All right. I was watching the game last night, and there's a analyst that I think does a good job, and he just got in a sequence where it was comical. I was like, "What are you talking about?" I won't say who it is because I like this guy, but it was hysterical. I'll tell y'all off the air, but I was like, he had to be so embarrassed.
That sounds like us on the podcast.
Some of us.
Oh, okay. Are you talking about yourself, Kyle?
No, I'm always spot on, baby.
Okay.
Spot on.
Right, yeah.
When the lights are on, I'm on.
All right. Yeah, no, we love to have fun here. By the way, Jay, we got a very special guest, too, for the playback. We have Patrick Johnson, your guy. I think you've heard of him, right?
PJ, is he on right now?
Pre-recorded.
No, pre-recorded.
Oh, okay.
We have him on, and we like him a lot. I've known Patrick since 1998 when he started his broadcasting career, so a long, long time.
Wow, that's awesome. Well, tell him I said hey.
All right, we will, most definitely. So, guys, disappointing. I would love to talk about the beautiful weather. I would love to talk about my Redskins winning.
Beautiful weather.
Yeah, we've got good weather here. Sunshine out here in my neck of the woods. Is it not for you?
I thought you meant yesterday at the game.
No. I'm talking about currently, while we're recording Sunday afternoon. It's finally, the sun is out. I could talk about a lot of great things. I spent a long time with my daughter today, hanging out and shopping. But now, let's talk about Saturday. Very depressing, the weather. I will just say this. I woke up this morning and I really was hoping that I was dreaming. It was one of those things where I was really disappointed. I really thought the Pirates would win a close one. I did not see this coming. Did you guys? Who wants to take the floor? Kyle, you want to start?
Sure. No, I didn't. When you kind of analyze things and you look at their strengths versus our weaknesses, it makes a little more sense. But I still thought it was going to be a close game. I was calling for overtime all week. I thought it could go either way. Their record is insane to me. Four wins. You look at their four wins. They beat us. They beat San Jose State. They beat Wyoming, and they beat UCF. I mean, they have four good wins. All four of their wins are better than any of our four wins. They almost beat Memphis. They almost beat SMU. They almost beat Cincinnati, just like we did.
Yeah.
And it's crazy to think they're 4-8. Bubba and I were talking last night, and we were talking about comparing, what App State's done this year in the Sun Belt, and me and Bubba both think that Tulsa would be playing App State for the Sun Belt Championship. They would have won the West if they were in that league. I mean,
yeah.
So I didn't see it coming. No, I didn't think they would have that many rushing yards on us. I'm not surprised they passed on us because their quarterback's quite good if you can't get pressure on him, and he doesn't like pressure. And we couldn't get any pressure on him at all. So,
yeah.
So that doesn't surprise me, but the rushing yards surprised me. And I also, offensively, I thought we'd score a little more, about maybe
yeah.
a touchdown or two more. I don't know why we insist on playing Penix, but that's, it is what it is. Shane was due. He was a little off early in the game, and he was due not to play as well. He got it going by the end of the game. But disappointing loss. Program still a lot of growth this year. When you look at the overall product and the games we lost and played well in, I expect next year, even though it's a tougher schedule, we'll be competing for a bowl game.
Hey, you know what? I was going to tell you this, real quick. Something I want to talk about, and I want to throw this out to you too. November 29th, Friday, made a year ago that Scotty Montgomery was fired, and 2 years ago that Jeff Lebo resigned. November 29th will always be a special day. It's my best friend's birthday, Joey Griffin, so we'll give him a shout-out. JoJo, happy birthday to him. But I wanted to talk about that, too, in our roundtable, if you want to intermingle the loss and the November 29th significance, too.
Yeah, well, let me start off by saying, first off, you got to give credit where it's due, and that is that Coach Houston came into a rough situation. He hit the ground running. He made the best of it. He made mistakes. I think he's learning from it. He's always had winning records wherever he went. So I'm sure that this year's record wasn't what he wanted. But if you look at things other than the win loss, you see that we made a lot of progress. Tulsa had a great scheme. They came in very well prepared for what we were doing. And with their offense, I could tell just by watching it on TV how much bigger they were than us. Their linemen weren't tall, but they were probably as wide as they were tall. So it looked to me like they cut their splits down, because early in the game they were taking fairly wide splits. And we had guys, I believe Alex Turner went right through one time untouched and made a tackle. So they cut their splits down, and what that does is take away the quickness of our defensive front, because when you cut your splits down, there's not a gap in there anymore, because you got all that beef in there. And then they would pull a backside lineman on the plays, and whenever you get that backside lineman filling up in there ahead of the running back, it just that's a lot of beef coming at you. And they were getting good movement by just running straight at us. And then once you get that started and you do the play action passes, we had some defensive backs that looked like on Billy Bass on the Bass Pro Tour for fishing. They got hooked, lined, and sinkered, because they just were out of place because of taking the fake. So that was you got to give credit to Tulsa for doing that, for what they did. With their defense, they took away what we do best. I mean, simple as that. And that's, to me, that's exactly what you do, coaching defense. They took away C.J. C.J. Johnson is a young receiver who hasn't had somebody in his face like that this year. Plus, I don't know if you noticed the size of their cornerbacks. You know, they didn't have little tiny cornerbacks out there. They had some tall guys, and they were physical. And then what they would do is rush three and drop eight. So you can come up with a lot of different coverage schemes with that. And then if they did need an extra rusher, they'd just bring one more, and that's just four. So they still got seven people in the pass coverage. They weren't going to let us get them. They weren't going to let us throw a deep ball. And again, they were going to be in the face of CJ and not give, of course, their front was – we couldn't move them. We just couldn't move their guys. And our offensive line did not have the, as good a game. So, you know, there was a lot of things going on yesterday. And again, I agree with what Kyle was saying as far as Tulsa. You know, they're a good football team. And the record don't show it. But sometimes, of course, that's why you that's the difference between coaching and spectating. Is coaching, you gotta really get in there and find those things, and spectating, you just see and then listen to the people like Jay tell you what's going on. So, so anyway, but yeah, yeah, it has been a year, hasn't it? And shoot, there's been a lot of things go on in a year, hasn't there? So, and plus we got recruiting. What's that, signing day coming up, December 18th? Is that right?
Yeah. Sounds right.
Okay. So anyway, tough way to go out, but it leaves a lot of room for improvement with a good motivation right there. Because I guarantee you, if anybody start taking a break in the winter workouts and off-season programs, just remember getting your ass beat and see how that felt going in the dressing room. We don't want to do that. That's not what Pirate football is all about. And I guarantee you, we'll see a lot of improvement next year. So,
Bob, hey, Jay,
are you there?
Jay, go ahead. Jay, you there?
I just think you know, obviously, you know, tough game yesterday, and you know, everybody wanted to get to that fifth win and get some, you know, momentum and confidence going into the off season. And it was a tough game. I mean, Tulsa is a good team, and you know, they came in and you know, just when they execute early on in the game and, you know, put us behind, you know, it was tough having to play from behind, and then they just took away some of our weapons. And you know, it was just a day, you know, where things just weren't clicking for us. And, you know, the way I look at it, though, too, is, you know, this season, you know, where we were last year after that NC State game to where we are now, you know, so many improvements and the program's on the right track. The biggest thing now is, you know, to get to work on next year and the recruiting, the development, and, you know, bringing in new players, the competition that's going to happen in the offseason. Because I think, you know, obviously we're on the right track and a bunch of great improvements and you know, from last year to this year, and things are really on the upswing. The biggest key for the team now is, you know, we know it's in the right direction, but how far can we take it next year? And that's going to be, you know, the work in the off season, because, you know, next year, you know, the goal, you know, should be a bowl game. And, you know, hopefully we can get past six wins and well beyond that. But that's what I'm just excited for next year, to see how much more this team continues to improve, and you know, the new faces that come in and the players that are already in the program, how much better they get next year. And, you know, I wish the season could start next week, because I think things, you know, year two, you find out a lot about your team, and, you know, you learn a lot from year one. So I think next year there's going to be huge improvements continue to be made.
Yeah, I really think so as well. And that's one of those things. A lot of folks have talked about how do you play Cincinnati the way we did, nearly winning that ball game, and SMU, and have games like that, but then have games like USF, and then yesterday where you expected to be competitive and were not competitive for essentially the entire ball game. And when you have a young team, a young roster like we have, and a lot of new things in terms of what we were asking our guys to do and just laying the foundation for the future, when you factor all those things together, it's not uncommon to see inconsistent play. And so and it doesn't make it easy to see it, but it's just the reality. And I think it's certainly going to pay off in the long run. I really think so. And not that Coach Houston and his staff, like we were discussing off the air, and I think Terry, maybe you even said it on the air, coaches are human. They're going to make mistakes. And there are certainly things that I kind of scratch my head with. But then again, I'm not there all week in practice, and so I don't know all the rationale and everything that goes into these decisions that are being made sometimes. But all in all, you have to be very encouraged with where things seem to be headed. And if folks want to laugh at who our four wins came against, Coach Houston and his staff, all they can do is just play the schedule that they had laid out in front of them. No, we didn't have any great wins by any stretch of the imagination, but they did what they could with what they had in front of them, and I'm very excited with where our program's headed. As far as yesterday's game specifically, I think the biggest disappointment and surprise, even though we've given up our share of yards on the ground, I was just going in Tulsa, even though they had been a very competitive team, like you guys have noted, they had only run for like 120 or 125 yards per game, and then also struggled to protect the quarterback. And I think that game yesterday just really puts it under a microscope as far as if you had any doubt as to how far we have to go in the trenches and our defensive front. I think that really put a spotlight on it yesterday, and them running and throwing for more than 330 yards. So,
I'll tell you one thing I didn't like, and I will talk about this, and I know you guys think that I'm anti-officials, but I'm really upset. Something I've noticed and I haven't brought up, but I'm going to bring up on today with this season, is the very fact that C.J. Johnson is NFL caliber receiver. I really believe if he keeps working on what he's doing, by the time he's a senior with this coaching staff, he has a shot to make it in NFL. And what I'm upset about is apparently coaching staffs have learned that the American officials will not call, that you can grab on him all day long. And they go, well, we might get a couple pass interference calls, but at least he won't be burning us for explosive plays and touchdowns all day long. And that's what bothers me.
I'm going to have to call a young receiver, get schooled, is what happened. And he's going to learn from these things, because the way you keep a guy from holding you is you stay far enough away from him that he can't hold you.
Okay.
There's also ways to slip and go under, and there's a lot of little techniques that he will be learning through the course of time. And unfortunately, experience is the best teacher, but it gives the test first, then it gives you the lesson. So, he's going to be good. You're right about that. But, he'll learn, and he's also got to learn that's all that guy's doing is taking him out of his game.
Right.
And that's what hurts. And but, our whole team, we were playing, we have 50 freshmen.
CJ still made some good catches yesterday.
Sure.
What we haven't talked about is, you didn't notice because he was so MIA that they really took out of the game, was Tyler Snead. They took him completely out of the game.
Well, he had, I think, 6 or 8 catches.
I was surprised by that too, Kyle.
Because they weren't significant. They wrapped him up
immediately.
That's right. That's what you do when a guy's beating people is you stop him. They did a great job, and our other receivers had opportunities. And if you notice, Holton did throw to the other receivers.
Yeah. One thing
they didn't make a play. they didn't always make the play, and that's just experience too.
I would
have wet feel.
I would have maybe, in hindsight, again coaching from the stands when I've never coached. Maybe
from home.
maybe got CJ over the middle some more. See if we could got him to make some plays like that. A la Dwayne Harris, Justin Hardy in the air raid.
Right. Well, one thing I don't understand, I will say this, and I don't like to, I'm not criticizing, I'm just making an observation. But he stays on one side of the field.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not quite sure I understand that one, because it's a lot easier to find him.
Yeah.
And also by being on the line of scrimmage, he can't motion, which makes him more vulnerable to being held at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, there was one game we did throw it. We did have him run some crossing routes and things, and he got open over the middle. What the hell game was that, Bubba? There was one game.
I want to say that was – I want to say I know Temple, it seems like he crossed – caught some – crossers, like you're saying, whether it's, I remember him making some nice grabs on dig routes where had pretty good coverage and he did a good job attacking the football.
Well, I think
maybe it was Cincinnati.
I think what they did some was they kind of, it's not so much a spy on Halton, but they do have somebody, they made sure they knew where Halton was because he didn't have a lot of yards either. And then, running the ball, and then that guy would also drop into pass coverage. So that guy could roam around the middle. And that's your fly in the ointment right there, because with a guy like that, you're not real sure where he's going to be.
Well, their defense has played pretty well in almost every game. When they don't turn the ball over, about the only game their defense hadn't played well in was Navy, and that's just a whole other animal. But, you know, even in their loss against Houston last week, their defense played well. They turned the ball over 84 times.
Yeah, right. I think yesterday they had three and we had two.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken. I was surprised by that, actually.
We didn't do anything with it. And I thought something else, too, to point out about this team, and this is all psychological. Ain't nothing the coaching staff can do about it except keep coaching. We don't do well under pressure. We played our best football when there was no pressure on us. We didn't play particularly well in Connecticut. We did find a way to win.
We're learning.
South Florida when there was all kinds of expectations for that game. And then we didn't play well yesterday because people thought we had a chance to win. The guys just don't know how to handle pressure, and that comes from not winning.
That's because you're no longer natural. When you start pushing, it's like I coached track and field for years, and a lot of times if you're a sprinter, if you want to run faster, it's because you relax. You put less pressure on your body. And same goes for a football game. When you start forcing yourself, Jay can talk to this. Jay understands what I'm talking about. You start forcing yourself and you get out of character, so to speak.
Yeah, I just think, when teams are facing pressure, facing a new situation for the first time, so, like, even though you have, some veterans on this team, this is still a new coaching staff and still a new team, a new year this year.
Right.
And closing out the season this year, there's those strong performances we saw in some other, games where, we didn't play as well, but they're still learning how to, finish out games, finishing out the season, play against, different types of styles of teams. And the other thing is learning how to win games or learning how to counter teams when they take away certain options.
Right.
So, again, like I'm excited about the future and the improvements that I'm going to, that we're all going to see next year. And, obviously this year, we wanted to win as many games as possible. And we knew with the new staff coming in that there are going to be, a lot of things they're going to have to change and clean up from the previous staff. And, I think we took huge strides. It's just, now it's going to be, year two, phase two of the program. And, it's going to be a big learning opportunity for these players too, because now they know what the coaching staff expects. After the season, they can go back, reflect, watch film and see, what went well, what didn't go well, and what they need to specifically improve on for next year. Because I remember I was there, you know, I played with John Thompson and Skip Holtz. Staffs were, you know, at ECU, and the first year Coach Holtz came in, we finished 5-6. So we were on the doorstep of going to a bowl game, but the previous year with Coach Thompson, I think we only won one game. So, you know, we made huge improvements, but then when we got to year two, everybody already knew the offense, knew the defensive schemes, knew what to expect, knew what winter conditioning was going to be like, knew what spring practice was going to be like. So it was more of a comforting feeling, but also too, it was more of a improvement year where, okay, you know, now we know what to expect and this is what we need to do to get to that next level. So I think, you know, I think that's what's going to happen for this game.
You played with Jamarcus Veal then.
Jamarcus was 2 years older than me. Yeah.
2 years. Yep. Okay. I was close. Yeah. He played at the same high school I came from.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Later.
Yeah.
Too.
He was a senior when I was a sophomore. Yeah.
Jamarcus.
He's a great guy. Yeah.
He came to ECU as a linebacker and then got behind. He played behind Vonte Leach.
Yep. Yep. So, and then he played fullback. Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So anyway, you know. But you're right about that. And I want to say something about. I kind of noticed through social media people saying something about that. That Coach Houston had made a comment about the defensive and offensive lines. The way we recruit is different from his predecessors.
And that is, we recruit players.
Yeah. Well, this is what happened. People are, you know, some of them are going to be negative about everything. So. They brought this up that, you know, now he's blaming the past, you know. And I'm going to tell you, he was as far away of blaming the past that I have hair. And,
he didn't do that. Now, Montgomery did that constantly.
Okay,
I heard Houston do that all year.
And but I will say this, Coach Houston did say we had a good week of practice. he didn't say a great week. He said a good week, which, you know, because I think the coaches were a little surprised by the way we played. You know, they said, we've got some veteran coaches, and we've got some guys that they've worn a lot of different colors. And these guys are ready to make this their destiny, you know, and they want to do a good job. There's nobody over there that's not thinking already about what can we do to get better for next year. And, we'll, you know, I'm sure they're already out recruiting, speaking of that. So, and I feel like that, you know, as a fan, if I don't go out and speak well of East Carolina to my friends here in the middle Georgia area, and if I don't project a positive attitude about things, where else are they going to get their information? I want them to see that we're headed in the right direction, and that's the way I'm going to be. People that want to be negative and talk about that East Carolina's in the wrong, you know, don't hold us back. Because I'm going to tell you, East Carolina, we can go places, and it takes a lot of hard work and commitment, and that means a little bit of money too. So, but I tell you what, overall, I can't tell you, shoot, it's so much. It's at least we're mad about
this morning. We lost.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're not just mad at all the other things, you know. Before it was just so much different, and I am so glad that we're moving in the right direction now.
Yeah, I'm already looking forward to, you know, you got signing day, then you got spring ball, and you open up the season with Marshall, which is, that's a fun way to open the year, and they're coming off of a 8-win season. Who knows what they'll do in their bowl game, and it's a good way, it's a good test to start the year next year.
Right.
No question about it. I think, don't you guys, what would you think next year with the schedule? You think any hope the going 7-5 maybe? I mean, it's going to be it's not an easy
who
schedule,
knows?
Man.
I mean, you got to look at how the signing class, you know, who signs, what kind of players we get, some transfers out of the transfer portal to help on defense. I think the potential on offense to be really good. I'll probably say 6-6,
with the tougher schedule. And I think that would be something to be proud of. The next year's schedule, I believe off the top of my head, next year, every team we play except two are going to bowl games this year.
Yeah. Well, I say we're going 12-0, but, you know, that's me.
There you go. 12-0.
I agree with Kyle, and based on what we know at this point, even with the tougher schedule, I would say probably six, maybe seven wins. I would lean towards 6-6. How much improvement are we going to show defensively? How much improvement are we going to show in terms of being able to run the ball more effectively? And so those are some of the big things to keep an eye on in terms of how much improvement we show. And I know we lose a lot on the defensive line. We lose Alex Turner, Jalen Price. Of course, Kendall Futrell coming off the end. A guy that registered at least, 11 sacks, maybe 12 sacks this year. So we lose a lot there, but then those guys that redshirted this year, guys like Trevion Freshwater and Keziah Everett, Emmanuel Hickman, how are those youngsters going to be able to step in there? And it'll be interesting to see maybe if there's any late additions as far as a grad transfer, JUCOs, and so forth on the defensive front.
And also, speaking of linebackers, you got the kid, transfer from South Carolina, we're trying to get, who was there this weekend. Former Gamecock. Jay, what were you going to say
I anticipate and, you know, obviously hope for this, but I think the team is going to take a big step next year. And the schedule is tougher. I mean, I think we very well could get to 7 wins. You know, maybe even more if things really click. But I think realistically, and the goal, you know, should be to go to a bowl game for sure. And I think, you know, I think we can definitely do that. And, you know, and honestly, if we don't, you know, then that would, you know, be disappointing. But I think we're going to take a big step next year. But I'll tell you, looking at that non-conference schedule, and I know all four of those games aren't right at the start of the year, but the Marshall, the South Carolina, the Norfolk State, and then Georgia State, you know, you look at those and the team's going to, you know, really get momentum at the start of the year. They're going to have to come out ready to play and get off to a good start of that non-conference slate. Because if you, you know, you got Marshall, then South Carolina, and then Norfolk State. So you figure Norfolk State should be an easy W, and Georgia State beat Tennessee this year. So there's, you know, three of those four are going to be, you know, they're going to be tough. They're going to be tough. So if we, you know, if we can go, you know, obviously everybody wants 4-0, but if we can go 3-1, I mean, that would be huge. Yeah.
We don't play until October, thankfully.
Yeah, it's what I think October 5th.
Yeah,
but you know those games, those out of conference games, you know, those are ones if we play well, we should have a really good record, and that will boost us up for the conference because we know the conference, the American is good. I mean, the American is a lot tougher than it's the best it's ever been. So, you know, in order to get some momentum and have a good base underneath us, we really need to, you know, clean up there in the non-conference schedule.
You know, here's the scary part. You know, the last four seasons, you know how many wins we've had over conference teams we're playing next year?
No. How many?
Zero. The only team we've beaten in conference the last four seasons has been Connecticut, and they're not going to be here anymore.
Cincinnati.
Oh, you're right. Cincinnati. Okay.
Yeah.
So one.
Yeah.
We beat Cincinnati once. You're right.
Well, and you know, go ahead. What'll be interesting is what happens with some of these other programs. With, you know, Charlie Strong and USF going to be a new coach there. Then, you know, you look at some of the other schools. You know, Luke Fickell is a candidate. At other schools, you know, the American, Norvell is, Willie Fritz is.
I would expect to see Josh Heupel's name come up for that Missouri job.
Yeah, and he is too. I know he's got a huge buyout, but I mean, you know, so a lot of these schools could have new coaches. You know, you never know what's going to happen, whether that's going to be a positive, you know, whether the program will maintain their success or they'll take a step back. So it'll be interesting to see when all the dust settles, you know, who's still at those schools and who makes a change.
Yeah. And speaking of these coaching stations, you mentioned Charlie Strong getting fired. It'll be interesting to see who South Florida targets. It's a good job, but you know, it'd be interesting to see if they go after a current FBS coach from a MAC or Sun Belt type school, or if they go after a coordinator, if they go after another former, you know, major program head coach, or what. I have you guys heard any early candidates from South Florida?
I haven't,
but I was just looking at the Missouri one, the Missouri Open, and they listed, you know, Willie Fritz, Norvell, Heupel. They listed Fickle.
Heupel makes a lot of sense.
The AAC. For South Florida, I mean, you know, I don't know. I know, you know, one name, and I haven't heard this, but, you know, Lane Kiffin, I'm sure, would be at least mentioned.
I could totally see
Lane Kiffin.
Yeah, he won their division there. Florida Atlantic won their division in Conference USA this year. So,
and it's fine. You know, they've lived in Tampa. You know, from, you know, when he was with the Buccaneers too.
Yeah.
So.
I can see that.
Unbelievable. But he's got a pretty wife.
Yeah, indeed.
But they're going to have a lot of good candidates down there because obviously it's a great city, you know, city, big city. AAC is a rising conference, and you know, they're a team that, you know, if you do it the right way down there, you can have a lot of success in South Florida.
Not an American team, but a former Big East team. The Rutgers Scarlet Knights hired a new head coach last night, and it turns out it was Triano after all.
Yeah. They were just getting the money straight.
Yeah, so.
Nobody else wants them.
I don't know about that. But Tennessee didn't because they're ridiculous. But Shiano's a great coach. You know, his wife's a Pirate.
Is that? Well, I give that to him. Okay.
Yeah.
I just know, I remember him from when he was coaching at Tampa Bay, and end of the game, the other team was just, you know, killing the clock. And he had his guys, his defensive front dove at their legs and all. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, played like it was the last, and you know, and they were. It wasn't like they were going to pick up a fumble and run and score and win the game.
But he's all about physical football.
He made the comment about, you know, well, we're going to play hard every game, every down. Well, okay, fine. Then you know what's coming. You know, what's good for the goose. So, but anyway, that's just. I'm an old guy. You know, I remember those kind of things.
Another thing about bringing him in is, oh, sorry, that last point on them. The thing about that is, you know, who knows how much success they'll have there because the Big Ten's, you know, a lot tougher than the Big East was. But he's going to make that a lot harder to get a win against Rutgers than they've been. I mean, that's going to be more of a challenge now for the Big Ten teams.
He's a good recruiter. He always recruits Florida well.
Yeah.
Huh. The Rutgers? That'd be interesting.
Yeah, well, he run there before. He did a great job there the first time around.
Mm-hmm.
He had him all the way up to, like, number six in the country at one point.
Yeah. I mean, he had a bunch of talent there. And, I mean, you know, they win one or two games every year. You know, they have been. If he gets them to four or five wins, you know, consistently, maybe more. I mean, think about all those Big Ten teams that he's going to knock off because he's going to have to get those wins somewhere. So, I mean, it's going to be a much tougher team and a better team.
The key for them is going to be winning their non-conference games and then getting a couple wins in the Big Ten to flirt with bowl eligibility, and those people will be happy.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah, and that's one of those things. If folks don't really know Greg Schiano's history and what he did at Rutgers the first time, how bad that program was when he took it over, and I think he was something like 68-67. They're like, well, why are you so excited about that? But 20 of his 67 losses came in his first two seasons.
Yeah.
And then six out of his final seven seasons is something he won at least seven or maybe eight ball games. And like Kyle said, had that one year where he went 11-2 and was ranked in the top 10.
And he has his own saying. He loves to yell,
like P.J. Fleck yells, row the boat at Minnesota back when he was at Rutgers. I don't know if he'll still use it. He used to always talk about chopping wood, keep chopping wood, chop wood, chop wood, chop wood. Y'all remember that?
Yeah, I forgot about it, but, yeah, I recall it now that you bring it up.
Chopping wood.
So maybe they can, like, he can take a boat paddle from P.J. Peck, from a P.J. Peck, from P.J. Fleck, and chop it up, and then you can combine them.
Wisconsin got a bunch of them yesterday.
Yeah, they rode their boat all the way back to Madison.
They're warming those fish huts out there on the lakes.
Yeah. Chop the boat.
Yeah, chop the boat.
That's what they did. Jill went for Wisconsin. I was, you know, P.J. Fleck's been a guy that I've always thought was overrated. But what he did at Minnesota this year, I can't really say that anymore.
Yeah, again.
When's the last time they went 10-2?
I did watch one really good game last night.
You watched the Monroe-Lafayette game too?
Alabama getting beat. I tell you what, I could watch it over and over and over. I love it. Nick Saban, watching him at the end of the game.
They're going to the playoff, right, Terry?
Look here. You will not believe it, but I guarantee you.
They're still talking about it.
They won't drop farther than six. You watch. They'll be number six.
You're probably right. I can see them dropping to seven. But, you know, because you look at Utah and you look at Oklahoma.
But look at their out. Look at their schedule.
They're out of conference schedule this week, yeah.
Even their in-conference was to a certain degree, because Ole Miss was not a quality team this year. Neither was Mississippi State, for that matter. And I tell you who had the toughest schedule in the country is Auburn. Auburn played
Texas A&M.
They played Oregon, Florida, LSU, Alabama, Georgia.
Texas A&M was just tough.
Texas A&M,
Texas A&M schedule is just tough as Auburn. They played Alabama, LSU. Did they play Georgia? I'm not sure.
Clemson.
Yeah, and they played Clemson.
Clemson, that's so, yeah, but anyway, it was good to see that. On a somber note, great 1971 Heisman Trophy winner for Auburn, Pat Sullivan, passed away. He was at the game and was able to see the game, and then he went home, and they said he passed during the night.
Oh, wow.
They haven't said the cause of death. He had been having health issues. It wasn't a total surprise, I don't think. And I'll have to say, my son, when our son was born, our son's named after Coach Dye and Coach Vathan, Patrick Henry. And Coach Dye sent us a honorary scholarship for him, and it's signed Pat Dye and Pat Sullivan. So, that's a interesting little thing, and people don't realize what playing college sports can do for a person, but it's these kind of things that make it all special. And had it not been for East Carolina giving me that opportunity, I never would have been able to do the things I've been able to do. So
you wouldn't be on a podcast talking to us. How about that, sir?
I guarantee you I wouldn't. Y'all wouldn't know. Y'all say, Bunk, who? You'd be like you'd be like Ernest Byner.
That's right. His former teammate.
Jay Sonhalter. He's going, who is this old guy?
No, I know who you are, Terry.
Guys, on a lighter note, since I know y'all just referenced Ole Miss.
Oh, yeah. Also, I was going to say Coach Dye is not doing well. They honored the 89 team, Auburn football team last night. Yeah, 1989 was the first time Alabama and Auburn played away from Legion Field. And so the reason they did that is Coach Dye. And he told, there's a story about him meeting with Coach Bryant, and he said, Coach Bryant, how long are we gonna play this game in Lincoln Field? And Coach Bryant said, as long as we have that contract. Well, the contract ran out in 1988, and so Coach Dye would not renegotiate wanting to play there. So they started playing home and home, and that's when Alabama made their stadium like it is. Because at the time, their home field wasn't. They played their home games in Birmingham.
Yeah, they still did that quite a bit through the 90s.
And now Legion Field's not used for much anymore. And
UAB kind of says they use it, Terry.
Right. Well, I guess they did come back and take
Christmas. They only won conference USA West.
I thought they built that. No. I thought they built a stadium of their own.
Not yet. They're going to. It's going to be in downtown Birmingham. It'll be a 30,000 seat stadium.
I made a mistake.
You did. And I called you out on it like I always do people when they make mistakes. But
there you go.
Speaking of coaches whose names don't come up for anything, talking about job openings, Bill Clark at UAB. My God, this year they were super young. He had a lot of old guys who transferred, stayed around, whatever, when UAB brought back their football program. This year, all those guys have graduated and they're super young. And for him to win the West Division of Conference USA this year, it's just remarkable. And how that guy's name isn't coming up for other jobs is beyond me. Bill Clark was a football coach.
I did one of their games 2 years ago. And he was very impressive to talk to, and everybody in the program talked about him so highly and glowingly, just about what he did down there, the culture of the team and everything he brought to UAB and what he kind of did to build that thing up down there in tough circumstances. So, yeah, I mean, I've seen him on a couple lists and everything as candidates. Nothing like he's at the top of the list, but he is outstanding.
You know, Manny's not getting any looks, very many Power 5 jobs. He doesn't seem like the kind of guy they would go after, the Lane Kiffin type does. But I'll tell you what, South Florida can spend a lot more money than UAB. That's who South Florida should try to get. They should go after Bill Clark.
South Florida was paying $5 million to Charlie Strong.
Yeah, and they're going to be paying that buyout. They're not going to be paying that much, I don't think, for their next year, Coach Terry. But they can pay a whole hell of a lot more than UAB.
$5 million. I didn't realize that.
He was the highest paid coach outside of the Power 5.
Yeah.
And they don't spend a lot of money on facilities. You know, they just use the boat.
They use the big boat.
Which I think is a mistake. I think UCF has shown what an advantage building a stadium is. Right.
And they can build the stadiums now cheaper than they used to could, I guess. But depends on what they want, I guess.
Yeah.
So,
go ahead, Bubba.
I had a few topics for you, but before we get to those, Dave wanted to go ahead and pitch it to our guests, and we had the opportunity a couple of days ago to catch up with Patrick Johnson of 94.3 The Game, and let's go to that interview right now with Patrick.
Well, anytime that you have the next guest on, I've known this gentleman for, I believe, 21 years, going back to 1998. He was like 12 when he started in radio. Ladies and gentlemen, the host of the Patrick Johnson Show. We're able to get Patrick Johnson from 94.3 The Game. How are you, man?
Guys, I'm well, and I hope it has been an exciting football season. It seems like we were blinking our eyes in August, and here we are done already. And it's good Thanksgiving, and kind of excited about getting into college basketball, and it's cool. Great to be with you guys.
Absolutely, Pat. I wanted to have you on, and we did, because I've loved being with you in the pregame, and then obviously the No Quarter postgame show with Trent McGee on 94.3 The Game. Folks, make sure you listen to that. And been a great season. I just want to kind of give a little bit. We obviously are recording this because of the holidays before the Tulsa game, so we don't know the outcome when we're recording this. But
what a game! Boy, what a game! If you weren't there, you missed it. What a game!
Triple overtime. Oh, my goodness.
We'll predict how it is. Yeah, hopefully one of us will be right. I just wanted to mention that to folks. We always try to be, obviously, honest with folks and when we're reporting stuff.
No kayfabe here.
That's right. Pat, I want to have you on because I just want to get your take. I was telling the fellas, and you're a veteran broadcaster, that the difference between covering the East Carolina program over the years, especially under the Scotty Montgomery years, we're not trying to beat up on Scotty Montgomery, but don't you even feel like even you and I and the folks in the media that are covering the events now, it's even more exciting?
You know, I noticed this the last few weeks, and then Donnie Kirkpatrick talked about this before Thanksgiving when the coordinators did this, you know, do their weekly deal with the media. Talking about how players were, like, having fun still at practice and you know, I'm sure you guys picked up on this. And this may even go back a little bit, you know, in seasons prior to the Scotty Montgomery error. Not era, but error. You know, I think that it seems like these players like being around and like practicing. You're still enjoying football. And I mean, when's the last time you could say that about an ECU football team this late in November that they were still seemed excited about, you know, practicing and seemed excited about the season continuing? Even the years where there's been bowl games and you learn about some of the turmoil and stuff maybe that was going on behind the scenes, you know, guys get over it at a certain point. And nobody likes practicing. I'm not here to you know, say that. But, I mean, it just seems like this crowd in general has taken some ownership of the program, and I think that bodes very well going forward. And, it, you know, I think Coach Houston's a pro. He's great. You know, we talk to him every week on my show every Tuesday. So, I mean, it's been great talking to him. He's willing to, you know, kind of talk about some other things there. That's Sunholder calling me. Should we bring Sunholder in? No, to hell with Sunholder. Sunholder, by the way, doing Kent State and Eastern Michigan.
He's doing that on Friday.
So there you go.
One of my favorite coaches in all of college football, Chris Creighton at Eastern mm-hmm. Michigan. So Jay Sunholder, or as I like to call him, Jason Halter. Is that going to be an ESPN 3 or ESPN U game or what?
Yeah, he's got a 3. And so, you know, Sonny's worked some plus stuff and plus some other stuff and all that. But this is it's all kind of divided. There's different producers for all these different levels. But Sonny has worked 3 games this year that have been assigned by Big ESPN out of Connecticut, like the mothership. You know, has assigned him. And see, that's what happened to my good friend Rini Ingolia. You know, I know you guys have talked to Rini a lot. You know, Rini got on where he was doing a few games for ESPN3 his first year. And, you know, Sonny then, you know, is kind of following that trajectory right now. Like, he got picked for this game a couple weeks ago. So that bodes well for him, I think, next year. He's done really well when he's been on. He's done a couple of American games earlier in the year, some action day after Thanksgiving. So the thing that's taken Sonny so long to get to the big ESPN platform is he didn't play in the pros. And, I mean, you guys have watched enough ball. I mean, there are some absolute meatheads as analysts sometimes, especially for some of these college games. But, I mean, they played in the pros. And because they played in the pros, it gives them – kind of some credence to, and I'm not saying everybody's terrible that does that. I'm just saying that gives you a little bit of a leg up. Well, Sonny never made an NFL roster, and so that's kind of given Jay a longer road to hoe, so to speak. You know, I mean, if Jay had been in the league 2 years, he'd probably be, you know, making big, big money now doing games. But he'll get there.
Yeah, no doubt. I hope to see Jay do more network games. But at the same time, next year, East Carolina's switching over to ESPN Plus for non-televised games. They won't be on ESPN 3 anymore. They'll be on ESPN Plus, and we're going to be responsible for our own production. So be nice to see East Carolina give Jay a phone call and have him be the analyst for our ESPN Plus games next year.
And PJ on play-by-play, right? Is that what you were
going to say? Oh, my God, yeah. That
I finished your sentence there.
Well, there you go. Yeah, I've never heard you do play-by-play, Patrick. I have to hear it first and analyze it.
I have heard it many times.
See if you're good or not, and then I'll let you know.
All right.
He's
well,
very good.
So the thing, thank you, Dave. The thing that, you know, with that, I think ECU is really going to take that more seriously than, you know, some
Old
of the
Dominion?
Other, than Old Dominion, than some of the others have, you know, this year. I don't know how much football is going to really wind up on there, especially next year. You know, I still think a lot of those, what I've talked to some people, I think it's going to be kind of front-ended where they're still going to keep a lot of the American games on the traditional platforms they've been on because, you know, that's going to take some time to build that infrastructure out at all these different schools.
Right.
You know, so that's, you're probably not going to see a lot of football. You'll see basketball, you'll see all the other sports. But I don't know how much football you see. But, Jay's done some basketball, too. So, I mean, Jay's kind of, you know, put himself in a spot to be versatile, which is good. And, so that's good stuff. I know Jay was hanging around Greenville this week, went to practice, that whole thing. So, he's pretty tuned in pretty well. And he's easy on the eyes, according to the ladies.
Yeah, that's right. We'll leave it at that for sure. But the ladies love him. The fellas adore him, right? Like Rob Bass, the old
exactly.
The men want to be him, and the ladies want to be with him.
Right.
There you go. thank you, Kyle. But that I noticed that Pat with coming in the last season of covering the Montgomery era, how the guys like we were just kind of like, oh yeah, well we're here, and even though it's fun to cover practice, it was just kind of like everybody was doing their job. Let's get out of here. And now this year has been a lot more excitement around the program, even including the media. People seem to be members of the media joking around. And I can speak for us because I've been there around you guys, all of us. So I can kind of get a feel, obviously, of all the staff and everything for the practice. But I just want to make the observation as far as want to get your thoughts on the basketball program. I'm a little bit disappointed with the fans. I understand they with basketball that everybody there's a big hype and everybody was saying 11 new players. But I really believe in Joe Dooley. I'm a Joe Dooley apologist. I've liked him. I liked him when he was coach here the first time. I thought Mike Hamrick was a bonehead move to fire him and Logan. But that's a whole other podcast. But I love Dooley and. I really believe that he's going to turn the program around. I think that the key is for between football and basketball, the rebuild is going to be easier than the build. I really believe that it's going to take a long time, not overnight like we'd like it. It may take 3 years before we see the progress for the basketball program.
Well, think about this, guys. You've got Mike Houston on his way up in his coaching career, right? Entering his prime. Joe Dooley in his prime as a head coach, I would argue. Cliff Godwin in his prime. When's ECU ever had that?
Pat, have to go all the way back to
those three sports. Yeah. It's been years.
I was talking to The Voice, Jeff Charles, and he and I were talking about that. He smiled. And he said, Dave, you probably have to go back. So I'm going to give The Voice credit. That's what I was asking him about. He agreed. He had to go all the way back to when Logan was coach, Eddie Payne, and Gary Overton probably was the best triple threat we've had, and probably a generation ago, Pat.
Yeah, I think that's a astute pickup there by the legendary Jeff Charles. And, I think that's probably pretty accurate. The thing I like about basketball is Joe has talked about not competing. He's talked about winning. And, that's good. This doesn't need to turn into like Duke football where it's a pat on the head because you're competitive. You need to win. And, the fans need to, I'm not saying they need to be irrational, but fans need to be invested enough in it where they're pissed off, when we don't win games. And again, not be nuts about it. But we should win. We should expect to win. And I really like that feel that the guys running the athletic department have kind of brought to it. Mike Houston brings that to it. Although I think Mike and the staff are pretty realistic about this year. They expect to win. Cliff Godwin definitely expects to win.
Oh my God!
Joe Dooley expects to win. So we should expect that we're going to win. There's always this sort of fatalistic, you know, oh, here we go again. And I just, you know, I think we're getting to the point that we're going to start to maybe see that change a little. I hope we're getting to the point where we're going to see that change a little bit. Because, you know, this is, you know, great place, special place, really strong leadership. There are problems, but there's problems everywhere. Some people handle those problems better. Some people have more money to handle those problems than others. I think I really hope people get behind the basketball. And, you know, just because of the rough kind of scuttle start will not, you know, jump off of any so-called bandwagon or anything. So, you know, it's not been the greatest start. I think when you get the point guard back and playing and healthy, you know, and I mean, that doesn't need to happen tomorrow, but it probably would need to happen in the next few weeks. You know, I think you really will have an opportunity to see, a team. But they also got to get some easy buckets. You know, I mean, T.J. Long, who does a lot of work for us, played on the team that made the NBA tournament 25 years ago. T.J.'s great. You know, T.J. said, you know, if we're knocking down shots, we're playing together, we're playing great. Because we're not making shots, it doesn't appear like this team's playing well. You know what I'm saying? And I thought that was a really good observation on TJ's part because, you know, if the team were doing a few more things, scoring a few more buckets, you know, all is well. But, I mean, I think they're playing better defense. I think what they got on the wrong end of in the Bahamas was 3 games in 3 days. And, you know, Joe's making them play defense. And, you know, I mean, kids now don't play defense. They don't come up playing defense. You know, that AAU mentality, we got a game in an hour because we're, you know, playing 3 games in a day. So, the guy, you know, it was always tomorrow. And so I think, you know, getting a culture of winning, getting a culture of playing defense, I mean, that's just got to happen. And if they can get a few easy transition buckets or maybe somebody can, you know, get their shot right and start to knock down a few shots, then you know, the perception is they're playing a little bit better.
Yeah, Kyle, I know that you like the I wanted to get your take on the football helmet for Tulsa. Have you seen it?
Sexy. Love it. That logo, you know, I don't know what the combination is going to be, but, I mean, couldn't you guys see sort of like a pewterish gray to maybe being worked in the color scheme too a little bit or something? I mean, it just – that looks fantastic. It's really going to depend on, you know, what they couple it with the uniform. But, I mean, as far as the logo, I think that's just one of the coolest things I've seen. And, you know, it's got that great retro feel. You know, I've got old shirts that are older than you, Dave, and, you know, that kind of material, just, you know, put that logo on that kind of material, and you'd sell a million of them.
No doubt about it. And let's get on that. You've got the – in fact, Kyle, can you make some for us?
Well, they're selling that logo on some shirts right now. UBE in the student store and
UBEArmies.com. Yeah, I haven't seen it. Oh, wow. Okay, I'm behind the
They started the throwback section.
Is it that like throwback? You know what I'm talking about, Kyle? That kind of I don't want to call it stretchy, but kind of different material than like a normal tee.
You mean like a ring spun cotton, like a soft cotton?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, is that what they're selling it on?
I'm not real sure. But that is what I would put it on, looking at the logo.
Yeah.
So I would hope so.
You're kind of in this business too. I mean, you'd sell a gazillion of them if you put it on that kind of material, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, people would go nuts. We'd dig out of all the financial problems if they did that.
Well, they're selling them right now.
What do we have to lose?
Maybe should have did this helmet earlier in the year, and they maybe could have sold more of the shirts.
That helmet looks fantastic.
Yeah, badass helmet. I love the gray with the old school pirate logo, and then the purple face mask. The whole thing looks good. I doubt you're going to see us come out in gray uniforms, though we might. Who knows? That would be pretty cool. But honestly, that helmet would go with the purple jersey, and it would go with the black jersey. But if we do a full gray uniform with purple and gold numbers, that'd look great.
How sweet would that look? Seriously.
Oh, man. Yeah. And you know what? The very fact that I'll be honest, I didn't know how the Adidas thing was going to work out, but they have done a fantastic – I've been really happy with And I'm one of Kyle and Bubba and I are nerds when it comes to, I think you are too, Pat, when it comes to uniforms. And I really, really like, and I'm glad I'm wrong. And I was wrong. I thought that they would, I don't know. I didn't think that they would, I liked Adidas back in the day, but I didn't know. I haven't really, they seem to be coming back in style.
The uniforms have been fine. The only thing I would say is they have not matched those black jerseys from the rough era. The black jerseys that Nike was putting out back then, Adidas hadn't come close to touching it yet. But so far, you know, I'm wearing a pair of Adidas right now. So, I mean, so far Adidas is good job. And bottom line is, I mean, they offered us the most money. And
right.
That's what I remember when everybody was, when Comfort was making a big deal about the contract. I was like, well, you took who offered the most money, genius. You know, that's what you do in business. So, so I mean, to me, it's, you know, it's not an issue. I mean, Adidas offered more money than Nike, so we're going to go with Adidas. And, you know, I've been pretty pleased with the stuff so far.
I wish Adidas needs to kick in some of that money so we can get in an FBI scan. I'm joking. It's a joke.
What?
We can get in an FBI scandal. That's why we need some of that Adidas money, some of that shoe.
Oh, wow, yeah. I'm joking. That's big-time Adidas money.
I'm kidding.
Are you talking about basketball or football?
Yeah, well, everything, but I'm kidding.
Basketball scandal, so.
Yeah, I'm joking about that. But, no, I mean, I really like what the uniforms are kind of look like, and I like the way, you know, they've added some new stuff in the basketball arena. You know, to again kind of just tie everything in together with the branding and all that. That stuff matters, you know. And you go a lot of other places, and going to do some other games in the past at other places. You know, it's just funny how much that is, you know, kind of take it for granted at other places. And it's the right way to do things. And again, kudos to John Gilbert and Ryan Robinson for kind of bringing that thinking into, you know, what's going on in Greenville right now.
And Pat, I wanted to ask you, I know that I mentioned what we were talking about, football and basketball, but baseball is around the corner. I'm a huge fan, personally and professionally, of Cliff Godwin. I hate to use the word because it seems like we talk about every year. Do you think this is finally the year that we get over the hump, the monkey off our back when it comes to Omaha?
Well, you know, there's so much hype last year and expectation last year. And I think that, you know, the team was weighted down by that at times a little bit early on. I think they emptied the emotional tank, the passion bucket, if you will, with that regional comeback. I don't think they had anything left in the tank at Louisville.
Yep.
You know, and that was unfortunate. It, you know, kind of a bad end to a really special season. You know, it just seems like I know this. There are two things. I know nobody's going to work harder. I mean, you talk to guys who've gone through that program. They said they've never worked like they've worked the way Cliff and his staff put them through the paces. So I mean, if you're one of the nine that are out there, you're tough. You can play. You're mentally tough. You can go. So, you know, that's one part one. The second part is, you know, is the program to the point where even in a so-called down year or a year with newcomers or what have you, it, you know, talent-wise, is this the group that kind of puts it together? And, you know, maybe unexpectedly makes a run. Who knows? Maybe. You know, it's just, you know, it's interesting. We see, I think the talent in the program is of that level. And that's the expectation, obviously, every year. So, I you know, there's so many others you see that, you know, have a really good little run of 2 or 3 years maybe. And then, you know, it takes them a year or two to kind of restock the shelves and get back to that position. And we'll see how it shakes out this year. I'm kind of interested to see what ends up happening, you know, once things crank up Valentine's weekend.
No question about it. In fact, hard to believe, Pat, the baseball banquet's coming up February 1st. So if you're an ECU baseball fan, definitely save the date. February 1st will be that Saturday night. And I assume that they're going to have it again in the Student Center. I still haven't. That's one thing that, as much as I love ECU, I've got to make the point. Maybe I can do it this weekend or next week. I still haven't been to the Student Center yet, the beautiful new Student Center. I haven't been there as much as I love East Carolina and Pat and I both went to ECU in the 90s, and great stuff there. What you got coming up? I know that you obviously got stuff for the pregame and stuff for the Pirates. Do you have anything else you're working on that you can tell the folks for the podcast about?
Yeah, you know, we're going to next week kind of wrap up the season. I hope get a chance to talk to Mike Houston. We're still sort of working that. You know, we're doing a show as we're taping this. We're doing a show Friday, probably, you know, because it's a work week. And, you know, we'll be at Stadium Sports for the pregame Saturday. And then postgame will be Terrence and Eric and Trent. And, you know, we'll do that. And we're already starting to kind of figure out, okay, next year, what do we need to do to make everything a little better? You know, that's the big thing with our coverage. I'd like to think we're getting better. I think we've made a lot of strides this year over last year. We've gotten a little better on social media. You know, so it's all, you know, we've got a really good young group. Those guys busted their ass, you know, during a holiday period this week, you know, where everybody else is kind of checked out, you know. And they hustled and went to all these events. I mean, just stuff I can't get to because of all the work I got to do during the day. And, you know, those guys did a great job. Ben Byram, Derek Alcorn, and C.J. Powell, who's Pirate Al's son, by the way. And, you know, they did a really nice job to kind of, you know, make sure we had good audio and we have good content in that. So, yeah, and then, you know, we're going to probably be at the basketball game, do a little expanded show leading into the network pregame on Tuesday.
Okay.
You know, so that's kind of what's coming up. I want to make sure we're really paying good attention to basketball. We're not treating it as a, you know, afterthought. Try to get into covering that a little more seriously. I think that's been lacking, quite frankly, but just all the way around, not just us. But, I mean, I can only worry about us. So, I mean, I really want to make sure we're in there and we're doing what we need to do to make sure we're covering everything as well as possible. And, you know, your guys' contributions have been fantastic. And,
thanks, man.
I've really enjoyed that. It's been a lot of fun. So, all right. I'm getting family calls now. I got to go. Never mind Sonny. I'm getting the real deal calls now. So
right,
you guys have a great Thanksgiving, and we'll talk soon, I hope.
All right, man. Take care, buddy.
Patrick, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate you coming on the show. We appreciate the opportunity you provided with us this year with the Sports Objective to come on the pre- and post-game coverage on 94.3 The Game. So thanks again for that opportunity. Some things that I want to mention to you guys, speaking of the coaching carousel, I just saw some breaking news in the last few minutes. You've had three other jobs come open. UTSA, and that wasn't surprising. That's one that Kyle, you and I discussed.
They're tired already.
Yeah, they parted ways with Frank Wilson, and we'll see if they go after Graham Harrell. And then you also have USC firing Clay Helton and Boston College parting ways with Steve Adazio.
That surprises me a little bit about Adazio. UTSA, and you just mentioned USC fired Clay Helton, so that means you just said his damn name, Bubba. What's his name? Graham Harrell.
Yeah, Graham Harrell, former Texas Tech quarterback.
Yeah, he doesn't have a job. So that'd be a real easy hire for UTSA. He's a hell of an offensive mind, got good name recognition in Texas. If I'm UTSA, I hire Graham Harrell tonight, and I'm done with it. USC, you know, they need to make a good hire. I don't know who they'll go after, but I expect them to make a sexy hire. That'll be interesting to see. And then BC, you know, that's interesting. Wonder what direction they'll go, who they'll go after. Will they look at some American coaches? How much interest will some of the American coaches have in going to BC? That's a tough job in the SEC. I don't know. That's an interesting opening. You guys got any speculation on those three jobs?
As far as UTSA, the only thing, I mean, I would have said exactly what you did as far as Graham Harrell. And then I know not that this is going to happen, but, of course, any big job that comes open, you hear Urban Meyer's name thrown out there. So
USC, yeah.
Yeah. And what were you going to say, Terry?
Oh, I hadn't heard about that. I thought Clay Helton had gotten a vote of confidence at one point. So that's you.
Yeah, well, vote of confidence knows, you, generally means I'm going to fire you.
That's what. Right.
Speaking of another coach, and this coach is retaining his job, but it's not surprising at all that he's being forced to make some changes, and that's Tom Herman at Texas. He's had to part ways with defense coordinator Todd Orlando.
Yeah, well, they got high expectations in Lubbock.
Right.
I love Jesus Christ. Austin.
Awesome.
And they got high expectations in Lubbock, too. But Austin, that doesn't surprise me. And Herman shouldn't have been fired. He's a good coach. He just needs to get the right staff down there. And until they're competing in that Big 12 championship game every year, like Oklahoma, they're not going to be happy.
Well, you know, that happens to a lot of these coaches that keep wanting to go up the ladder. They keep searching for that bigger job and bigger job. And as you go higher, the people are having less patience. And, you know, these guys are going from being geniuses 1 year to 3 years later, they don't have a job.
I would expect another job that will come open. I would think that ODU is going to want to make a change and get rid of Bobby Wilder.
Well, there you go. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah. I certainly Bobby Wilder is the guy that I guess since that program was brought back all those years ago, I say all those years ago, I guess it was 2008 or 2009, something like that.
I think it was 2006, it seems like to me.
But maybe, yeah, as far as the first season of competition, though, I'm not sure. But anyway, Bobby Wilder done a nice job there, but they've certainly fallen on tough times the last couple years. And you hate that for David Blackwell and Derek Riley. And they got the axe last year in Greenville, and that could very well be the case again this year in Norfolk.
Did y'all see the Georgia and Georgia Tech players get into it? The receiver and defensive back.
I did.
You know, he's going to miss the first half of the SEC championship game.
Yeah, that's what – it's one of those things. You hate it, but at the same time, for the you just got to be disciplined and as tough as it is, not do those things in the heat of the moment to hurt yourself and hurt your team. But I knew also that Georgia had been without the talented wide receiver Cager yesterday, so hopefully, or for their sake, it'll be interesting to see if he's supposed to be back for LSU.
Well, you know, the SEC used to be known for defense. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, and speaking of that, and Georgia is certainly one of the best, if not the best, defenses in that league, and it'll be interesting to see how they match up and how they are able to slow down that LSU offense with Joe Burrow and company.
Well, the little running back for LSU is good. And the thing about it is he's so small, he's hard to find behind those linemen.
Yeah,
I can't think of his name. He was the difference in the Alabama game. But
it's that time of year though, as far as the coaching carousel. One job has been up for a while at Florida State, and I was
going to ask you guys about that.
Yeah.
About the Tiger situation. Who do you think is going in there? And also, do you think one thing, guys? I was telling you guys in a group text yesterday. I'm wondering about Philip Montgomery. Do you think he's going to be fired this week? I mean, I know they played like really well. They've been competitive, but the fans in Tulsa probably could argue that they
got a lot back on offense next year.
Yeah,
I don't know. That's a good question, actually. I don't know.
I would keep him because of what you said, Kyle. So I'm not anti him. I think he's a good coach. I'm just saying it seems. The first 2 years, as the voice said, Jeff Charles, they were bowl teams, And then now they've gone from bowl teams to they haven't had a couple seasons. Was it two or three losing seasons now? But I just want to get y'all's thought on that.
I don't know. I think it's tough to say whether they'll fire him or not. I have no idea. I can see that going either way.
That's one of those things from afar. I mean, not having a pulse on the program and everything that goes on. It's tough to say, and like Kyle's saying, but at the same time, based on what we do know, what I would say is this, judging from afar, coming off a game against Houston, a Houston team that is very much having a down year, and losing like that at home and having four turnovers, allowing a kickoff return for a touchdown, and then being able to, when you're 3-8, going on the road in the final game of the season, even if it is against another 3-8 opponent, or 4-8 opponent, just being able to do that and just take care of business from the get-go the way Tulsa did yesterday, that certainly doesn't point to anything but that Phillip Montgomery and this staff and the team has belief in the staff. So, you know, it doesn't scream, okay, this is a hopeless situation.
You know, something else. He's an Art Briles disciple. Kendall Briles is on the market now. It'd be interesting to see if he stays, if Kendall joins the staff. Talking about Florida State, obviously, you know, Kendall's available. So, that's a good question, though, whether Tulsa will make a change. Right now, I would lean towards a no, but he wouldn't surprise me at all. Who do you think Boston College will target, Bubba?
Oh no, that's a good question. It's like you said, that's a unique situation, being in the ACC, and I heard Coach Logan on his radio show over the last several years talk about what a unique job that was back when he was coaching Matt Ryan at BC on Jeff Jagodzinski's staff.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know. I'm racking my brain trying to figure out who would be the right fit. I'm thinking of MAC head coaches, and then I'm thinking of coordinators, and
maybe. And this is totally. This is just somebody that popped into my mind because he's done a nice job there. Was it Lance Leipold up at Buffalo? Could he maybe you see his name mentioned?
Same area, roughly the same area. Yeah. That's not a bad idea, Bubba. I could definitely see that.
Like I said, I hadn't really gotten that far into it or given it that much consideration, but that would be one that would certainly come to mind and be on the list, and guys that you would be interested in having a conversation with.
That makes sense.
But something else I started to bring up a few minutes ago, you guys were talking about Ole Miss and just how they had not had a very good season. It'll be interesting to see what goes on there. Speaking of Matt Luke and that staff, though, I mean, he had a couple of proven head coaches as his coordinators in Rich Rodriguez and then also his defensive coordinator, drew a blank on his name.
McIntyre.
Yeah, Mike McIntyre that had been out at San Jose State and done a nice job there and then also had some success at Colorado. But it'll be interesting to see if those guys get any consideration anywhere. And as far as Ole Miss is concerned, though, how about that in the Egg Bowl the other night? It's been talked about ad nauseum by now, but this is the first podcast we've recorded since it happened. But Elijah Moore having – what appeared to be the game-time reception, but he literally helped his team piss it away crawled across the end zone and raised his leg like a bulldog. And then as soon as he did that, I looked at my dad and I said, well, I said, they're going to miss the PAT, you know it. And then sure enough, but you just hate to see that. And then earlier in the ball game, not to rag on him, but just is one of the, just one of those things, just a brain fart, because I'm sure, I mean, the kid's obviously a good ball player, but he fielded a punt and then signaled for a fair catch after he caught the ball. It was kind of funny.
He didn't have a good night. But no, that was the selfish play on his part to do the celebration where he knew damn well he was going to get a flag and put the kicker in a tough situation. Maybe what should have been an easy PAT, a pressure kick, and thoughts on the ball game. And, you know, who knows if they'd have won it, but at least they'd have went to overtime. And now you got Mississippi State going to a bowl game. So, it is what it is. But, yeah, very selfish play by that kid. And I'm quite sure he heard it from his head coach and his offensive coordinator.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And another rivalry game that I wanted to mention. How about what Bronco Mendenhall's done at UVA and the Cavaliers improved to 9-3, winning the Coastal and the right to play Clemson in the ACC title game. And they snapped a 15-game losing streak, and they had dropped 19 out of their last 20 to the Hokies.
Yeah, he's amazing. I mean, and you look at their basketball and their football program. I mean, what is, other than a few good years in the past, what's Virginia been recently without Tony Bennett and Mendenhall? I mean, they've been below 500 average at best in both of those sports. Now, you know, you got a all-world coach and Bennett winning a national championship and Brock and Mendenhall, what he's been able to do there. I mean, that's how you can tell. That's a sign of a good coach coming into a situation that isn't already built up or has traditions, and they just completely flip it around. I mean, that's been amazing.
Yeah, it really has. And Perkins, the quarterback, he's obviously been a key cog in that turnaround. And it really hasn't surprised me that Bronco Mendenhall, the way BYU was always so steady and consistent under his leadership, it hasn't surprised me that he's been able to turn around things in Charlottesville.
Yeah, no doubt. He did a good job. Speaking of BYU, how did they close out the season? Did they end up getting bowl eligible? Or?
They did. I think they're 8-4.
Oh, right. So they closed out the season strong. Wow. Okay. Well, then that guy's definitely saved his job.
Yeah, undoubtedly. That was a much-needed strong season for BYU head coach Kalani Sitake.
Yeah.
I misspoke. They're 7-5 because they did fall to San Diego State 13-3, but still a solid year for the Cougars, and I think they have a tie in with the Hawaii Bowl.
Yeah, I believe that's right. So they may be playing the Warriors. Did they play Hawaii in the regular season?
I don't believe so this year.
Okay, I know the Hawaii Bowl. I believe the Hawaii Bowl has a tie-in where they can take them, a team from the American or a team from the Mountain West. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out.
Yeah, they did not play Hawaii this year. And I think it was either last year or a couple years ago they did play Hawaii, because typically when teams play Hawaii, a lot of times you'll see them play you play them non-conference, or obviously BYU's an independent, but you'll see – Army or whoever's playing them played 13 ball games, and they only played 12, obviously.
Right.
But anything else from the weekend of college football that really stands out to you guys?
I'm just reading over Boneyard Banner right now at some of these idiots up here. Some of our fans, and it's just a handful of them, we really should have their brains looked at. I mean, it's just amazing. I don't. Yeah. Let's just go ahead and fire Mike Houston now.
Yeah, that's kind of what that's what I was saying earlier. Just as far as some folks, they just don't have a feel for things. They see the things that are on the surface. They badly want the Pirates to be successful, and but they don't know all that much about it as far as everything that's going into it, and just objectively looking at things as far as personnel and deficiencies in certain areas and what's realistic and what isn't.
No, exactly. So, you know, we'll talk about it next year. if we're 3-9 or something like that, then you can start having some conversations. But I don't think anything of that nature should even be spoken. Coach Houston's a hell of a football coach.
Something else I wanted to mention to Jay. I know, Jay, you're right there in the Raleigh area. Needless to say, Wolfpack fans, even though they had a lot of injuries, aren't very pleased with Dave Doran after his seventh season. They went 4-8, yeah. And last night they were winning at halftime and then ended up losing, getting outscored 34-0 in the second half to North Carolina, who became bowl eligible at 6-6. But do you think Doran is safe going into 2020? And
yeah.
Because obviously Elijah Drinkwitz, his former offensive coordinator, did a heck of a job up at App State this year. The Mountaineers are 11-1 and playing for another Sun Belt championship. So it'll be interesting, yeah, to see if Coach Drink gets looked at anywhere.
Yeah, I think he'll be a candidate at places for sure. I think so. I was going to bring this up, but that whole UNC and NC State dynamic is going to be really interesting to watch the next couple of years, because Mac Brown, you know, coming in, he's already cleaning up the in-state recruiting and winning those battles that Doran was getting the past 2 or 3 years when Fedora was down on his downslide. Mac Brown's come in and he's starting to get all those top recruits. And obviously NC State only winning 4 games this year was a big nosedive for them. But I think he'll be fine in the next year. But I think if they have another year similar as this year, next year, he's going to be in deep trouble. And I think in the next 2 years, he's going to be in deep trouble, because as it stands right now, they don't really have a quarterback. They do have a young team, and they have recruited well the past couple of years, but they're not going to be getting all the top guys anymore. And, my prediction is I think in the next 2 years, he's either going to be let go or he's going to go and find another job, because I think Mac Brown's going to come in and take control of that rivalry and go ahead of NC State, then I think they're going to be in trouble. And fans are already not happy with his performance this year. And I believe in ACC play, he's like 21-35 in the ACC.
Being on the planet.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. The other part about that is, you know, you can get away with that stuff if you're winning. But if, you know, it's just kind of like Tom O'Brien. They kind of pushed him out because of the same thing. And, you know, if you win, you're fine. But if you don't, then all that stuff comes into play. So, I mean, they're not going to do anything this year. But I think, you know, if they have a similar year next year, everything's in play. And his contract goes through 2023, too.
Yeah, if he has a bad year next year, he's gone.
Yeah, yep.
He's gone.
Kind of looking at things, guys, as far as the college football playoff picture. Obviously, you had number 5 Bama falling. You're going to have LSU meeting Georgia in the SEC championship game. And so you have one Utah at 6. They're going to be in the Pac-12 title game. How do you see things playing out? Do you think Utah will take care of business and be able to maybe slide into that 4 spot should Georgia go down to LSU in the SEC championship game? Or do you see Oklahoma taking care of business against Baylor for a second time and maybe sneaking their way in? How do y'all think that's going to pan out?
Georgia's going to lose to LSU. Oregon is going to beat Utah. And Baylor's going to beat Oklahoma. And Alabama's going to be in the playoffs.
Hey, I agree. I think a lot of that's going to happen. I don't know if Alabama will get it, but my prediction is I think LSU will beat Georgia. I think Oregon will beat Utah. And then, you know, I'm not sure about the Baylor-Oklahoma one, but I think there's going to be a lot of movement at that 4 spot.
It'd be interesting to see who will get it. I think they're really going to play out. I don't know. I'd like to see. To me, I almost would put the winner of Baylor and Oklahoma in there. I mean, they're both great football teams. I think if Utah takes care of Oregon, they'll probably get the spot. And who's to say? What if Georgia loses a 1-point game? Maybe they just stay at 4. I mean, that South Carolina loss is terrible. That's the whole thing I don't get. There's not a team, none of those teams have a loss like Georgia does to South Carolina. That South Carolina loss was to a 4-win football team.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just all based off of two. When you lose, they lost early in the year.
Yeah, well.
Which save them, which I, well, no, which I.
Yeah, which, I mean, I don't agree. You know, I don't agree with that. That's just, that's how they do things now. It's like when you lose. So if you're going to lose early, because otherwise, you know, I mean, otherwise you got to climb the mountain, kind of like Oklahoma's having to do.
Also SEC.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, exactly. Exactly.
Guys, we got anything now, else? Or?
Something else I was going to throw out there is I was checking out some of the South Carolina-Clemson game.
Are Dave and Terry in a private room together or something? I mean, what happened to both those guys?
I don't know. I guess they ditched us.
Okay.
But something I was going to mention as far as South Carolina, they were – fairly competitive in the first half yesterday. It was 14-0 mid second quarter, and they were driving, but they had 3rd and 9 about the 25-yard line, and then like I said, 3rd and 9 about the 25 or 26-yard line, and then what they did is just run off tackle or between the tackles and didn't really give themselves the best chance of picking up that 3rd and 9, and played for a 39-yard field goal, essentially. So I was just thinking just the way that South Carolina offense has been, and folks in Columbia are getting pretty restless with Will Muschamp, to say the least.
Yeah, I guess they're going to hold on to him for another year. But, when you're not winning and getting to a bowl game and then you look across the state and your rival is just, you know, dominating nationally, it makes it twice as hard, and I would expect Muschamp's days are numbered. Next year, even getting to like a 6-6, he's going to be gone. They're going to need to compete for the East Division next year for him to save his job.
In his post-game press conference, he actually referenced last year's offensive numbers, saying that folks weren't bitching when we put up 30 points and 425 yards a game last year. So
what the hell has that got to do with this year? You're right. My response to that was, no, they weren't bitching, you dumbass. When you were doing that, they weren't bitching, but you're not doing it. I mean, what a stupid comment. Folks weren't bitching last year. Well, no shit. I mean, you mean to say when you were putting up good offensive numbers and winning, they weren't bitching? Right, coach. Why aren't you doing that now? I would have fired him for that. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was pretty funny.
Like, it would be like Bill Cosby. You know, people weren't mad at me when I wasn't raping women. Well, really? Really, Bill? I mean, you know, what a dumb thing to say.
Terry, Dave, you with us? I guess not. So
I think Terry and Dave decided to get out before I made the Bill Cosby joke.
So I guess it's down to Jay. Are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here.
Okay. All right. You guys have anything else? Or if not, then we'll go ahead and wrap this up.
Just exciting week of football and ready for next week and you know, ready for the Pirates to start the 2020 season. It'll be here before we know it.
Bubba, are you going to Boone to the Sun Belt Championship game?
Not that I know of. Not that I know of. I'm sure I'll watch it, and like I'll watch all the championship games next weekend. But at this time, I don't plan on making it. Probably.
Okay.
But it will be interesting them playing UL Lafayette again. That was a heck of a deep defensive struggle the first time, 17-7 down in, I guess Lafayette is how they pronounce it down there.
Bubba, the folks in Lafayette would like for me to inform you that they are just Louisiana now.
Yeah, I know it's not UL. Yeah, I know it's
Yeah, they don't like being referred to as
just University of Louisiana. Yeah. University of Louisiana.
You just call them Ooh La La.
Ooh La La, yeah. But anyway, heck of a year for them and the Mountaineers, and we'll be interested to see how the rematch goes next Saturday.
Yep.
Well, if you guys don't have anything else, we'll go ahead and wrap this thing up. For Jay Sonhalter, former Pirate tight end, and Kyle from LaGrange Barber, I'm Bubba Rosenbaum, and you've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.